Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's Steve Bloomer's Washing Your Derby County podcast. Welcome. Thank you for listening. As always, off the back of a weekend of complete cobblers, just 7 days after the Rams saw off promotion rivals Bolton in front of a packed Pride Park, we had another golden chance to put daylight between us and the playoffs, and we blew it. The trip to Northampton Town looks like the perfect place to go 7 points clear of third, but a tortuous, limp, rage-inducing single goal defeat means Derby no longer have their safety net and that the race for the top two remains as tight as ever. It's Chris Parsons here, hello, and fresh from a demoralising trip to Six Fields. It's Phil Hyle. Hi, mate.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, what a dour performance that was. I mean, we'll get onto it, but core blimey, we just started to believe, didn't we?
We did. Tom's probably going to say it's the hope that kills you at this point, so I'll preempt him before he does. But I've lost count of the number of times I've somehow convinced Tom to do a podcast after sickening defeats like these. So I'm always grateful for you turning up, Tom. How are you doing?
You've got to be here through the bad times and the good. Unfortunately, as a Derby fan, it's predominantly bad times.
That's true, I guess. Look, we'll dive straight into the five word reviews of Northampton Town 1, Derby County 0. A fair few coming in, so I can't read them all out, but Raoul said bottle job starts as expected. Vaughan Richards said at least Bradley showed fight with a laughing emoji. Chris Hill, one of our patrons, says shoe army put boot in. Al Thomas said, why am I not surprised? Michael John said, please don't blow this derby. Nikki B said, completely undone Bolton hard work. Tweds on X said, literally limping over the line. Richie Rich said, got sucked into a scrap. Richard said, fine, sunny, 3 weeks' wages. And Simon Penny said, automatic promotion is overrated anyway. Lots to go out there, Phil. You were there, though, at Six Fields. I mean, you've seen your fair share of League One grounds now. It's fair to say, how does Six Fields rank up there with them? Looks fairly generic from on Rams TV. Is that an unfair assessment?
No, it's not, unfortunately. It was very generic. You could tell it was built in the 90s. No way near a proper pub, miles from the town centre. Those lads watched it from the that hill. There's a hill that you could see about a third of the pitch.
They had the right idea, didn't they? And didn't someone told me afterwards, one of them had like a shopping trolley or something.
I think they were lads, you know, that snuck out at half time because they weren't serving beer in the bar. So they got round it by nipping to the shopping centre over the road.
Right, right. And was a third of the pitch that you could see the third that Derby were attacking?
It was. Not that we attacked it a great deal, to be honest.
They've had a blinder there, haven't they? I bet you wish you'd done that. Tom, we've had some absolute stinkers on the road this season. Not that many, it has to be said, but you put it out there at the weekend. Was it the worst performance of the season? I'm going to say no, but I'm intrigued what your answer is.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think in the context of the season and the sort of expectancy, yes, because you're looking at Northampton not having won all month, Derby having a fantastic result last weekend and then going and putting in a pretty ordinary performance, especially in that second half where it was there to be taken, wasn't it? Like, you've got to send out a message to your rivals. I'm just wondering whether either Stevenage or Charlton at home also worst performances. And I know you're going to bring another one in from there, but those are two others which I think were pretty stinking.
Yeah, it's just recency bias really, isn't it? It was utterly crap at the weekend, but I think I remember having the same feeling of rage after Reading away. Certainly that was really bad. Stevenage, I was there. I mean, yeah, two of the goals were set pieces. We were pretty rubbish there as well. Phil, it was probably down there with games where we just simply did not turn up, did we?
Nah, we were pants. And at least with Reading, I come away and thought, Reading are a decent side and Stevenage are good at what they do, but Northampton are not good by any stretch of the imagination, but they thoroughly deserve to beat us. And that obviously is worrying. I don't know. There's a lot of things you could put it down to. Having Waghorn up front and he missed that sitter, that we're clearly lacking a proper striker now. I don't know why Warne played Thompson as sort of like a floating 10, if you could even call him that. If you're going to play anyone there, you play Sibley or go with 4-3-3. I just think we got it wrong on so many levels. The energy wasn't there either from all throughout the team. Warne's tactics weren't great. And then Waghorn, when we need him through injuries and he's not there to bury an absolute sitter.
Oh, it's awful, wasn't it? I was going to come on to it in a bit, but Tom, I'm sure you've seen it yourself. Great pullback, and well, it's just, you know, I've got so much time for Waggy, but you can't excuse that one. And let's face it, Dwight Gale and James Collins both took that one away, don't they?
Yeah, I'd expect Waggy to have tucked that away as well, even though it's on his weaker foot. It bounces up a little bit in front of him, and he just doesn't get over it. All he needs to do is hit the target. If he hits the target, it's a goal. There's no way the keeper's saving that. There's so much pace on the pullback that he just needs to direct it, and it's a really poor finish. And it pretty much summed up the afternoon. Derby had quite a few chances in the first half, but really lacked a clinical finishing edge, which is really disappointing. I think if we'd have got our noses in front against them, we'd have gone and run in 3 or 4. But the fact is we didn't. But also the fact is we're still in our hands. So yes, it's frustrating, but there's plenty more twists and turns to come in this season.
Yeah, trying to keep a bit of perspective. Yeah, the dust has settled a bit since the weekend and I've calmed down slightly. But yeah, it was my wedding anniversary on Saturday. So I went out for a meal after that game and had to do my best to not be just stewing over that rank Derby County performance. So yeah, not the best in that sense. I mean, even Ebu Adams missed a sitter as well, Phil. That's how bad it was. Doesn't really score many goals, I assume. But I'd probably say his was a much trickier chance than Waghorn's. A great cross on the right, and Ebu found himself unmarked, free header about what, 7-8 yards out, and he just completely gets it wrong, doesn't he?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the coaches or just bad luck, but are we telling our players, I know it's like a good technique to go with, to head it toward down and back into the ground, but how many times have we had like free headers that we've headed straight down into the ground that have then not ended up being on target? Like, I can definitely remember a couple from Nelson. He loves one of them. And now it's spreading through to Adams. Like, it just make contact towards goal and it probably goes in, doesn't it? But you can't really hold much against Adams. It was probably one of his weakest games in a Derby shirt. His passing was rubbish as well on Saturday. But yeah,
he wasn't the only one, to be fair, in that sense, was he?
No, like you say, he doesn't. He's been absolutely phenomenal since he come in. So I'm not going to hold it against him. But yeah, I think 8 times out of 10, he probably buries that one, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you were there, as we said, like Phil. I'm curious. I've been at away games with you this season where it's all gone badly wrong. Like Stevenage, it got very nasty. Particularly, that's probably Warren's lowest point of the season, he'd probably admit himself. But then other games we've lost has been just a bit of a sort of stunned silence, really, in the away end. Like, what was the reaction like from the fans who were there? Like, was there a reaction to the players on the day itself, or was it just like, how on earth has this happened?
It definitely was nowhere near as bad as Stevenage. I think we're too close to the finish line now, aren't we? And with promotion in sight, that I don't think anyone's going to, you know, really get vitriolic and call for anybody's head or anything daft like that. There was obviously voices of discontent. There was people giving what for to the players. I mean, Bradley, when he went off, my brother somewhat jinxed it by saying, calling him Bouncer Bradley on the train there. And he kind of did behave a bit like a bouncer, didn't he? So he was getting a bit of it. The ref was taking most of the flak, to be fair. And I think that was, I don't think the ref had a great game, but we definitely can't blame that result on the referee. But no, in the main scheme of things, the atmosphere was flat in general. And I think that the ground and just the area, like I say, it was a bit of a flat away day just because, and it was a bit of after the Lord's Mayor show, after the Bolton game. But no, people are staying relatively positive. And I mean, you'd have to be a bit of a poor fan, really, to be really getting stuck into him at the minute, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And I think people do see the bigger picture and everything that we have achieved this season. So hopefully, I think the majority of fans are putting this down as a one-off. It did come off the back of four wins in a row, for goodness sake. So a bit of perspective, I think. But Tom, the goal itself from Sam Hoskins, 23rd minute. He made it look easy. He took it really well, to be fair. But is there a hint of a foul on Kane Wilson in build-up? That's what a lot of the chat seemed to be afterwards. But I think what tends to normally happen after we can see goals like that is that we just say you can't use it as an excuse because Cashin just gets the ball floated over his head and we don't do enough to cut out the cross.
I think it is a foul, if I'm honest. It looks clumsy, whatever. It's definitely coming together and Wilson goes down. But as you say, Chris, the fact of the matter is that ball is 40 yards from the Northampton goal and is lumped into the corner and Bradley's going across one-on-one and needs to hold him up. And he doesn't. I don't even know what Bradley does. He sort of wanders over there as if he's going for a stroll to go and get a pint of milk and he realises he's forgotten his keys and turns around and it's like, oh, where's the other player gone? It was really poor defending. And even the cross is just sort of looped in. And Cashin sort of has lost the man, Hoskins, at the back post, and who's peeled off him, and he hits a really good volley. We were clearly pushing up. There's no one covering at fullback and stuff. And you've got to give credit to Hoskins for a great strike, but you've got to look at the defending, both from like Bradley in particular, I would say, but then also Cashin and whoever should be covering in that left-back position to allow Hoskins to run off Cashin. It's poor, but it's a great finish, so give him credit.
Yeah, fair play to them. I mean, obviously not Sonny Bradley's finest afternoon in a derby shirt, Phil. I had to miss the last 5 minutes because I think I had to go do a nappy change, actually, but I sort of came down and my father-in-law shouted at me like, oh, someone's been sent off. And I thought, oh, hello, we're back in this. And oh no, it's one of your players. Right. Okay. is there anything you can say in Sonny Bradley's defense there? You just think of all the players to do it. You got this guy who's got the experience in his 30s, who's come here to say he's going to get promoted, who is in really good form, let's not forget, who had really played himself into the side and talks about leadership and making an impression, and then he goes and does that. It's just moronically stupid, isn't it?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but is he just a bit of a thug? And he kind of, he was on Saturday, wasn't he? And I just stopped calling him Bomb Scare Bradley as well. I kind of think it does us a favour in a sense, because as I said earlier in the pod, I do think Warren should have gone 4-3-3, given a lack of striker, and especially if he's going to play Louis Thompson as your furthest forward midfielder. So I'd rather him play 4-3-3, and it kind of makes him stop the five at the back, and I'm not sad about that. It's a shame Fozzie was out as well, wasn't it, after he came in and done so well, but you kind of see it happening. Like, Bradley never wins. He does win headers from corners, but he never wins one and attacks one because he's always wrestling. And that's basically what the red card stemmed from, is he spent all game wrestling. The referee, it was the last corner of the game, the referee's given both players a stern talking to. Bradley wrestles, falls to the deck, gets annoyed that nothing was given and ends up clobbering someone. It's, yeah, for saying someone who was captain of Luton who went up to the Premier League last season, it is stupid. So stupid on his part.
Yeah, and a three-game ban. So, well, you know, Tom, you talk about three at the back, four at the back. We haven't really got much choice now. It's going to have to be four at the back, I guess, because we've only got two fit centre-backs that I can count, unless I'm missing someone. It's going to have to be Nelson and Cash, and then, what, I guess, Joe Ward or Kane Wilson at right-back, and Callum Elder or Louis Sibley at left-back, isn't it? Like, this ridiculous sending off has kind of forced one's hand for the next few games, isn't it?
I think, in a way, it could be a blessing, because one of the frustrating things that I find with watching Derby this year is that the performances are often, they often sort of, I guess they're not great, are they? Let's be honest. And it's okay when you're winning. So think about, like, say, Charlton Athletic, go away there, have one shot on target, win it 1-0, great. That's what you want. 3 points, get in the bag, get home. But when it's not very good and the results don't go well, then that's the biggest challenge, I think, that Derby have found this season. And that's where it becomes quite negative, both in the ground and then also on social media. And I tend to find this year that when Derby play that three at the back or five at the back, depending on which way you look at it, the performances aren't, we seem a bit slow and a bit sort of like, I'm not really sure about what we're meant to be doing. I find us to play a lot better when we play a four, like we did, for example, against Wigan. That was a four at the back. I'm pretty sure it was a four in the back against Oxford as well, when we performed really well there. And yes, sometimes it doesn't go quite so well. I think that was at Peterborough, for example, but I don't think we played badly at the Peterborough home game and lost that. So I could be a blessing in disguise in the fact that, okay, whilst it's in our hands, we're in a bit of trouble. Because we haven't got strikers, we haven't got defenders, we haven't basically got a team. So we're going to have backs against the wall, underdog mentality, siege mentality, and that's what Warren thrives on. So I actually am feeling fairly positive about that fact, and that's something I can certainly cling on to, and hope that we take that into Blackpool, we take that into Portsmouth, regardless of what happens in those results. We're going to go in there, we're going to fight, and we're going to be determined to put right the wrong that happened on Saturday.
I absolutely love, Tom, how you've turned a defeat, a sending off, and 11 injured players into a positive. I mean, absolutely fair play to you. That's incredible glass half full stuff. Now, I know what you mean, though, because the Pompey away, which remains an absolutely enormous game, like, I don't know what we're going to do there. Like, you would have been a lot more comfortable with us having three at the back and that defensive solidity in theory and trying to nick one on the break. Not that we've got many attackers left to do it with, but yeah, probably going to be goals in that game, I imagine. So we'll see what happens on that one. But to compound it, Phil, the latest person on the treatment table, possibly, actually, to be fair, at the time of recording, we don't know the extent of what's happened to Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, but he sort of limped off, didn't look happy. Warren said that it could be a hamstring issue, could just have been like an impacts injury, thought he may have just got like a knee in the leg. So I think he's having a scan. By the time people listen to this, we'll know either way, I think. But the injury situation is just an absolute joke at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, some people are blaming Warren, aren't they? I don't think I'd go that far. I think I'd put it more down to bad luck. He's alluded to it being an aging squad as well, and I think there might be something in that. Mendes-Lang, if he's out for any more than a week or two, it's a massive blow, isn't it? I think Blackett-Taylor was probably the one shining light from Saturday. He did come on, and it was one of his strongest performances so far.
He beat his man a couple of times, didn't he?
Yeah, he was. We were getting quite a lot of joy with him and Elder down that side when they both came on, and I'd start them both in the next game. If we're short of strikers, short of number 10s, if Barkhausen's out as well, going to have to play 4-3-3. Blackett-Taylor's going to be absolutely massive to that, especially if Mendes-Lang's out. But yeah, it's a massive worry to have all these attacking players out at the minute.
Now is his time to shine, for sure. Look, we're going to come right back to this. Still a fair bit to get into on SBW, but I wanted to make time to tell you about something amazing that we've done this week, where we recorded a fantastic Derby County exclusive from inside the Rams dressing room. We had an extended sit-down chat with Kane Wilson, the Rams' very own right-sided Brummy Buffalo, as I called him. He didn't seem to mind that. That went down well. Loads of topics that we covered with Kane, his move to Derby, that nickname, of course. And interestingly, and we'll got a clip of this in a second, how I love watching Kane Wilson because of how much he dribbles. I haven't really seen a player like him in a Derby shirt for a long time who just is so willing to bomb forward, try a few tricks, drop the shoulder, nutmeg a fullback, get to the byline, go one way, go the other. So like me and Kutch, we had a chat to Kane today and we asked him an interesting one, which is that we think the art of dribbling is a bit of a lost art. You know, you don't really tend to see it as much anymore. And it's great to see Kane Wilson slaloming down the right wing as he does. But he seems a bit of a throwback, if you know what I mean. Like, I think in modern coaching, it's often the way these days to cut back and play it safe and play a little triangle or retain possession or recycle the ball. So we asked Kane Wilson if he thinks he's a bit of a throwback as a footballer. And here's what he said.
This is a conversation I've had a lot with different people, is that I think people get kind of not taken back by when I dribble, but they almost, like you say, like it gets people excited because it's almost a thing where people don't do skills anymore, they don't do tricks. And I think a lot of that, though, me personally, is because I think defending's got a lot better from back in the day. Like, so for instance, now, like we used him, I'll use him again because he's so good at defending. Ryan. Say Ryan now. Ryan's going to tackle 8 out of 10 people who are doing tricks and stuff because he's so good at defending. I think that over the vast majority of football, defenders have become more physical, they've become more clued on, they've become... So nowadays, you have to outsmart them, maybe 1-2s and stuff like that. Whereas I think I've really crafted my dribbling from when I was a kid. It's always been my favourite thing to do. I was always watching videos. I was always on outside with my dad doing tricks. And from if you watched, I promise you, if you could get a video of me at under 13s, under 12s, I'd be doing the same thing I'm doing now. And that's kind of how I always wanted to be. So I think a lot of it in that... Well, a lot of it is defenders have got better and people have got more scared of doing it. Whereas I don't really care if you're good at defending because I still think I can get past you. And I love, there's nothing better, I promise you, than when if I get to the byline or if I come inside and I shoot, whatever it is, and it just gets the fans excited. I love it. It's my favourite thing to hear, honestly.
So that full interview will be exclusively on the SBW Patreon. Some bonus content on there too, where we got our own patrons to send their questions to Kane Wilson. So you can hear the full 40-minute chat as well as supporting the podcast in everything that we do by heading over to patreon.com/Steve Bloomers Washing.
Martin. Low. And again. Delivers with his weaker foot. Patterson. Martin! Out of the wilderness, onto the score sheet, Chris Martin may well have salvaged Derby County the most unlikely of points here.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hi, Derby County fans. I'm Branko Struper.
Hi, I'm Paolo Wanchop.
Hi, I'm Mart Poom.
And you are listening to Steve Bloomers Washing.
Yeah, so plenty of injury concerns for Derby right now, Tom. It's just, as Phil said, an absolute joke at the moment. I think it was Radio Derby who tweeted out the fact that we can actually field an entire starting 11 of players who were injured or suspended. Vickers, four at the back, Nyambi, Rooney, Bradley suspended, Fozzie all injured, Mendes Lang, Bird, Fauna, Barkhausen, Gale and Collins. How worried are you, Tom, that this will just derail our season?
Yeah, I think it's a real sort of danger and it's a risk, and that's the importance of having like strong strong squad depth, but obviously in League One and even the Championship, you don't have that, do you? You have like 11 to 14 players who predominantly carry the weight for the team, and having that many players injured. And it's not just the fact that we've got backup players, it's also players who've been competing in the first team so much that are the ones who are predominantly injured. The thing that there was sort of a bit of discussion about why is this? And the thing that's quite interesting I look at is that a lot of these are thigh, hamstring, calf problems, which suggests something about muscle strength. And I know we talked about briefly, it's an aging squad. A lot of the players are sort of the wrong side of 30. But at the same time, is there maybe a bit too much intensity in some way? The training has got to be, obviously we have no idea. We don't watch the training, don't know it. But just in the fact that there's that pattern of hamstring injuries and thigh problems, and Max Bird's obviously got his calf. He's not the wrong side of 30. Like that they're muscle injuries which come from fatigue. So are the team being pushed too much and asked to do too much in training? And maybe the amount of games that we've played, we've obviously had a bit of a run in the Papa John's Trophy or whatever it's called these days, which could have added some more games into there as well. So definitely concerning. But as I said at the about sort of 10 minutes ago, it's an opportunity for those players who haven't maybe shone this year to try and take that scruff of the neck. And it's Derby and our siege mentality. We might be in second, we might have things in our hand, but suddenly everyone is looking at us going, right, they're there to be taken down, and actually we're there to hold on to it. And that's what we've got to look at.
Yeah, I don't know, Phil, you talked about it in the first half yourself about how much of it is maybe down to Warren's training. We all know it's intense. Is it too intense? I mean, of those players I've mentioned there, six of them are 30 plus. So I don't know, it's not really conclusive, is it, that it's like an age thing? And then, like, you know, Jake Rooney, that was just a freak ACL, I think, wasn't it? And then Collins is like a knee injury against Exeter, I seem to remember. So I don't think it's really conclusive either way. But one ray of light that I'm getting from all this is that even if it is because of Warren's methods and players are getting injured, they are also coming back quite quickly. Like, you know, Washington, who I know that not everyone rates to the highest of levels, but Connor Washington basically had his season ended as far as we knew. I think Warren even said we were unlikely to see him. Next thing you know, he's popping up on the bench. So players are getting injured, but they're recovering quickly. And James Collins, he's, you know, he was out on the grass again, whatever that means, in the warm-up at Northampton, and he might be able to feature in, I don't know, maybe back for Wickham at a push. So I'm just holding on a bit, Phil. I think with Gail and Barkhausen, what was it with Gail? It was what, like a 3-week hammy strain against Bolton like a week ago. So maybe back in a couple of weeks, or maybe back for Leighton Orient, maybe. Barkhausen, I don't know. Bird, I think Bird was, it was like a calf strain just before Reading, wasn't he? And that was about 2-3 weeks ago. So maybe he's back as well. It's quite amusing that Paul Warren said about all this, Dwight is going to be another 3 weeks. So is Tom Barkhausen. This sounds negative, but if we were in the playoffs, they'd probably be fit for that. That doesn't really help, Phil, does it? I don't really want to hear Paul Warren say things like that, to be honest.
That is such a Paul Warren comment. Just be quiet sometimes, Paul. Don't put your foot in your mouth. I'm never going to trust a manager as well. I'm never going to trust Paul Warren again, sorry, on his prognosis of injuries. Like you were saying earlier, how many times has he said a player's out forever or for the end of the season? He even turned around and said that John Jules might be back before the end of the season. I thought that bloke was dead. It's like, there's been so many. I wouldn't put it past Ryan Iambe coming back.
His goal scoring record was dead, pretty much.
Well, yeah. But he said Collins' season was done. He said John Jules' season was done. Who was the other one you mentioned? Like, he just keeps saying, and he'll do it the other way as well. He'll say someone should be back. Someone's been on the grass. Like, Washington was on the grass for like 2 months.
Yeah, I don't really know what to make of it, Tom, at all, to be honest. Or other than, is it mind games from Warren? Is he, you know, is he trying to manage your expectations? But I'm with Phil on this. I tend to take pretty much anything he says with like a gigantic pinch of salt these days, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. And it is all mind games. And I think Warren loves a like little story. And he also loves a throwaway comment, which everyone like jumps on, but has very little meaning. on the injuries, obviously, they're concerning. But the other concerning thing is that Aaron Cashin, Connor Howland too, but more concerning, Aaron Cashin's on 9 bookings. So I think if he picks up another booking, it's a 2-game suspension between now and the end of the season. So he would be an absolutely monumental loss. So we need to pray not that people don't get injured, but that Cashin doesn't have to make a tackle to deny someone a goal or an opportunity and take a booking for the team. Because actually that could be more detrimental than maybe conceding the goal with him being out suspended for 2 games. And Howland's in the same position, but I think is perhaps less vital to the team, shall we say, than Aaron Cashin.
I didn't realise that. And that makes Bradley's red card even stupider, because you don't want one of your two centre halves going in for 3 games on not two, 3 massive games, not being able to put in a big tackle, because that will be playing on his mind.
What's the point at which any of those get rescinded, or is he just on that disciplinary tightrope to the end of the season now? That we're past that point, aren't we?
It's usually after Easter, isn't it? I feel like it gets. Scrapped,
wiped off.
Yeah. I remember that being okay. Stevie Howard in 2007. I'm just sort of very quickly looking it up. Yeah, in the Premier League, it's the first 32 games, but I can't find it for the EFL.
Well, yeah, that is also another worry, which I didn't even know about, and is something else for me to worry about. So that's great. Look, Phil, 6 games to go. I didn't want to be that guy who rigorously checks the fixture list for Bolton, Barnsley and Peterborough, but obviously I've done that anyway, because that's what we're all about and that's what's, you know, just on my mind all the time. Look, it is this simple. If the 3 teams below us win their games in hand, Bolton have 1, Barnsley and Peterborough have 2, then all 3 of them will be just 1 point behind Derby. So yeah, it could all bunch up to a massive extent, Phil. But look, this is what the situation is. Bolton, 7 games to go. Stevenage, Reading, Bristol Rovers, Portsmouth, Shrewsbury, Port Vale, Peterborough. Barnsley, 8 games to go. Cambridge, Burton, Charlton, Stevenage, Reading, Portsmouth, Blackpool, Northampton. And Peterborough, 8 games to go, plus a cup final against Wickham, Carlisle, Leyton Orient, Port Vale, Oxford, Bristol Rovers, Cheltenham, Bolton. I don't think there's many huge takeaways from those fixture lists, really. Aside from the fact that Bolton, Peterborough on the final day, that feels massive, especially with us playing Carlisle. I mean, that's got to be a game where we win and they take points off each other. They've got to go to Pompey, or they've got to play Pompey. I can't remember if it's home or away. Barnsley, you've got to play Pompey as well. So it's not like any of the teams chasing us have a particularly easy run in. Are you reading into it at all? Or is it just that old adage of just Derby winning as many games as they can?
It's hard to look into, because we're all about as predictable as a tornado, aren't we? Like, we've lost a quarter of our games this season, yet we're sat and it's second in the league, and they're just as bad as us, if not worse. I just think it's going to go down to the last game of the season and be absolutely squeaky bum time and horrendous to watch. But I think we're going to do it.
I like your optimism. Tom, you're optimistic. Do you backfill on that one?
Yeah, I think there's still, I mean, what Derby have got, is it 7 games Derby have got left?
And 6,
and everyone else got 7.
And Barnsley and Peterborough have got 8.
It's just going to be so tight. There's so many games to go and there's so many permutations, and it's a condensed fixture list. Playing 8 games in 33 days is tough on the legs after a long season. But even playing 6 in that time is going to be a challenge, and everyone's got to play teams who are in form, and it's so unpredictable. The standout team clearly this season has been Portsmouth, because they just don't lose games. When they don't play well, they get a draw. And I think that's the difference between Portsmouth and Derby and Bolton and Peterborough, all of whom have gone through brilliant spells and then been awful at times as well. And every time you think, oh, one team's going to get away, they get brought back down to earth with a massive bang. So I do think there's, even in that short space of time, we're going to see a couple of twists and turns. And it wouldn't surprise me if Derby were outside the top 2 this time next week after the Portsmouth.
I said that as well, Tom. I said, and I meant it in a positive way, that we may well go down to 3rd at some point. And just looking over the next 2 games, like Blackpool at home, we've got to win that. We've got to win that, because if we don't, then, you know, we'll have to see what Bolton do at the weekend against Stevenage. I think they're away. That's a tough game. Stevenage is still right in the mix. But we don't win that and Bolton go above us, then everyone else plays on the Monday and then we're waiting to play on the Tuesday because the Pompey game's been moved. And, like, you know, we have to get something with two centre-backs and one of them can't tackle properly in case he gets a yellow card. Oh, God, I'm just feeling a bit glass half empty about it after the Northampton debacle. So, yeah, really hard to read into. But I think my only real takeaway is that I don't think any of those four teams, us, Bolton, Barnsley, Peterborough, are going to just rinse those that they're running and just storm it. I think all four of us are just going to collapse over the line, basically. And Kutch has nailed it. I don't know if 90 points does get you second this season. Like, I think could be mid to late 80s, maybe, with the way that these four teams are playing. And as Phil said, how we're all about as predictable as a tornado. So, look, we'll come on to Easter weekend before we finish. But, boys, a really important one we've got to tackle here before we finish. I was going to put this at the top of the running order, arguably the most important topic of this week, if not the whole season. We all tuned in to the fans forum last week after the Bolton game, where Paul Warne was among the speakers, gave some pretty divisive comments, Phil, it has to be said, where he was asked about a number of things, but it's been one of the biggest talking points to come out of last week. Everyone's got an opinion. So where do you stand, Phil? Do baked beans belong on a plate in a fry up or in a separate bowl?
They go straight on the plate, don't they? Come on. Like,
of course they do.
Any right-minded individual does that, don't they? When did the pot come in? I'm going to say it was the 2010s, wasn't it? It started to creep in.
Yeah, it's like the last 15 years, that phenomenon, isn't it?
What I also read into, though, was how flippantly Stephen Pearce said, yes, whack them straight on. And that was kind of his cavalier approach to our finances in the Mel Morris era, wasn't it? Just whack the million on.
It's a metaphor, that is.
10 grand on a contract.
Tom, you're a culinary sort of a guy. I take it you're a beans on plate guy as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Beans on plate. In fact, if I asked my son about it, it would just be baked beans on a plate and nothing else, because he loves them. But I think if you're having a fry up, you've got to have a sausage breakwater to stop the beans taking over the plate and tainting something else. Like, you don't want like beanie black pudding, which is another controversial thing if you do or do you not. You also don't want like beanie egg. It's difficult. I think sausage has got to act like the big dam buster that you eventually smash through to mop up the rest of the bean juice and the egg juice.
I cannot believe you've said that, Tom, because I got stuck down a YouTube wormhole this afternoon thinking about this, and my thoughts are that I'm going to defer to the person I defer to a lot of times on subjects like this, which is, of course, Alan Gordon Partridge, who spoke at great length in one episode about the mechanics of a fry-up. So for a little treat for you both, here's a scene from Partridge where he's giving a breakdown of his girlfriend Sonia's fry-up in season two.
Bacon, 10 on 10. Button mushrooms, bingo. Black pudding, snap. Minor criticism, more distance between the eggs and the beans.
It's needed.
I may want to mix them, but I want that to be my decision. Use a sausage as a breakwater.
He said,
I can't believe that.
This is a podcast highlight, Partridge.
Had you even seen that, Tom? Or is that just like sunk into your vocabulary somehow?
That is genuine. I'm not. I do love a bit of Partridge, but I'm not Kutch where I can quote it ridiculously. And I genuinely had no idea that he used the term breakwater. Or I don't think I've even seen that episode with a description of that. So
I'll have to stick it in the comments afterwards. My final word on this is that, yeah, you've nailed it there. I'm all for beans on a plate. Or for scrambled eggs on a plate. That's my egg form of choice. But yeah, you've got to have like a hash brown in there, or like a dam buster sausage. Phil, if you're listing your big five, your five certain starters in the fry up, who's the first name on the team sheet for you?
Oh, hash brown.
Yeah.
Love a hash brown. Yeah. Then Yeah, you got to have a sausage.
Yeah.
Scrambled egg, controversial with some.
Yeah, fine with that.
Bacon and mushroom.
Bacon and mushroom. Yeah. Okay. So no beans for you then. Beans isn't on the team sheet.
Not top five. It's not on my five a side fry up. No, it's probably number six actually on the subs bench.
Wow. I mean, mushrooms are a divisive one. I've got mushrooms down as like a, you know, more of a squad player, more of like a Tommy Barkhuizen in the fry up situation.
Well, you know my thoughts on Tommy Barkhuizen. So with beans, you can replace it with Tommy K, can't you?
Can you, Phil? I don't know if that's Tommy
that.
Having that.
No, actually,
are you replacing?
Absolutely.
Are you
not.
Replacing beans with ketchup?
Also, what are you doing putting ketchup on there? Everyone knows that with bacon and sausages, you get brown sauce or Daddy's or HP.
No, I hear you there. To be fair,
HP with a fry up, Daddy's in a bacon sandwich.
Yeah, we have this argument before every away game where someone makes bacon sandwiches and we can't decide what sauce to have. But at least we are all in agreement that Paul Warren is clearly wrong and beans belong on a plate. So glad to have tidied that one up. Thanks for contributing. A final one then. I said we'd talk about it. Blackpool at home on Good Friday and Portsmouth away on the Tuesday on the old telly box. Phil, how many points we're getting from those two?
Ooh, I'm hoping four, but it could well be one or two. Portsmouth, like you said, Blackpool is a must win. You know, if we don't win that, then we've no hope really, because Wickham and Portsmouth are really tough games, and the type of games that Paul Warren has struggled at when he goes to the stronger teams in the division away from home, he can often find it tricky. So Blackpool is a gimme. What makes me feel a bit more confident is when we put in a stinking performance like we did on Saturday, we tend to back it up with a good performance and a positive result the following game. So I can't see us winning at Portsmouth, but I think we're capable of a draw, so I'll go 4 points.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with Phil there. Like, I think we will beat Blackpool just, and then a draw at Pompey isn't a disaster. Tom, you agree with that?
6 points, easy.
Ah, there we
two
go.
2-0, 2-0.
That's a daddy sauce talking, that is.
Yeah, no, I think realistically, I think 4 points would be absolutely outstanding. But I think every team in this division can beat everyone else. And like, even if you go back to the Portsmouth game back in September at Pride Park, like, Portsmouth were decent, but Derby more than held their own, took the lead, and then should have held on to that game quite comfortably. It was a game of few chances, and I can see the same thing. What we've got to do is be disciplined at the back, not make silly mistakes, which is what we did on Saturday in conceding that goal, and then take our chances when they come, and they will come, and we've just got to be ruthless with it. So we've got to make sure that we cut those mistakes out and be ruthless. If we do that, 6 points is well within our reach. If we don't, you can easily see it being 0 points, which is the sort of topsy-turvy nature of League One so far this season. As you said, I can't remember who it was. I think it was Phil who said that we've lost almost a quarter of our games this season, which is crazy for a team in second place. But that's been the nature of the league.
6 points, here we come. Fingers crossed, let's keep the faith. But Phil Hyle, thanks for joining us, man.
Cheers, lads. Pleasure as always.
And Tom, thanks for your time as always.
All the best.
See you soon.